The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
770 KMED. Here's Bill Myers.
One of my favorite legal brains to talk to, and I don't chat with him nearly enough, but his name is John O'Connor, lives in the Bay Area. And he served as an assistant U.S. attorney in Northern California. And he represented the United States in both criminal and civil cases. And his book is Postgate, How the Washington Post Betrayed Deep Throat, Covering Up Watergate, and Began Today's Partisan Advocacy Journalism. It's a really interesting read. John, always interesting talking with you. How you doing, sir? Good morning.
Hey, great to be with you.
Yeah, glad you're on, too. Wow. Reason I wanted to talk with you this time is picking your prosecutor brain about what is going on with the incoming Trump administration. President Trump has actually asked the Supreme Court to kill this whole case, this whole sentencing case, which is also, I think, supposed to happen tomorrow, isn't it? Isn't that what when the sentencing is going to happen?
It is.
Juan Merchan's case?
And you have an appellate court that is allowing it to go forward, a New York appellate court, but I think Trump is going to go to the Supreme Court. And that's where, let's put it this way, assuming that this was a regular prosecution, even if it was a weak case, the New York court probably should not stay it or keep Trump from being sentenced. There's no basis for it. However, in this case, the judge, not only was it a terribly weak case, and as a matter of fact, a bogus case,
isn't the fact that he's asking for a conditional or talking about a conditional discharge indicative that it is a weak case, that there's not much that can be done or not?
Oh, well, they know it. They know it is. They just made it up. I mean, I've been through the instructions. There's no crime there. Even under New York law, there's no crime. But the judge instructed him in a way that if I were on the jury and I followed the instructions, I would have to convict Trump, too. It made no sense. But let me tell you what the key vulnerability here is. That the court instructed on federal election law, and it was a ridiculous construction of federal election law that he basically said that Michael Cohen's, the jury could find that Michael Cohen's involvement in helping Trump pay off Stormy Daniels was an in-kind contribution, and also the fact that he didn't get paid right away, that he waited for his bill to be paid, is an in-kind political contribution, and it violated federal election laws.
That's nonsense.
First of all, he's got no basis to say any of this is really an in-kind contribution, but the fact is, he's a state court judge instructing on a preemptive federal law that has nothing to do with state law, and you can't instruct a jury on federally preempted law. It's like a state court getting someone for federal tax evasion as opposed to state tax evasion. You can't do it.
So the state judge can't weigh on a federal crime then?
That's my point.
I'll bet a lot of people don't know that.
See, what's odd about this is that was the second crime. The first crime in this statute, if you have a false business record, that's a misdemeanor. If the false business record is intended to aid or cover up another crime, then it can be a felony. Well, they had to make up a second crime. The second crime was, among other things, was this so-called federal election violation. Well, of course, that was just made up out of whole cloth. Merrick Garland has sent his number three to New York to just help the judge cook up something that they think could get by the people who are covering this case, and they did it successfully. Because everyone was rooting in the main media was rooting for Trump to get convicted. Mm-hmm. But there is not only is there no federal election crime there, and the Federal Election Commission had already determined that, by the way, that there was no crime. And yet the judge, without any jurisdiction over federal election law, decided that somehow Michael Cohen's involvement amounted to an in-kind political contribution that was illegal. I mean, it just was made up. It was just something that's made up. You could get better theories at a bar stool someplace than this theory. But the jury didn't know any better. The jury says, oh, gee, the judge says this is a federal election crime. If if Michael Cohen participated in this. Well, he did. We know he did. I guess we got to find him guilty, don't we now?
Okay.
So it was a very, very silly kangaroo court. The jury didn't know that. They thought they were really doing the right thing, so I don't blame them. And the judge knew exactly what he's doing, and they know it now that this case is never going to hold up. But what they wanted to do was get an actual sentencing and then have Judge Merchan, then issue a judgment in that regard, a judgment of conviction from which a defendant normally would appeal. Mm-hmm. Well, once you get convicted of a crime like this, you stand as a convicted felon unless and until you get it reversed by a court of law. So they like the idea that Trump was a convicted felon, and even if later on he gets it reversed, they still will be able to say he was a convicted felon.
And that is really the goal of the whole case, right? Just the labeling is all they were looking for.
That's right. That's right. That's all this does. He was probably never going to go to jail anyway. I mean, that wasn't the big thing. It was always to label him, and the whole idea was to label him. And, you know, that was part of the campaign. And you will hear those talking points during the campaign if you go back and listen, that he's a felon. This guy's a felon. And, of course, you have, besides the other thing, January 6th, the threat to democracy. But one of their big talking points was he's a felon.
Yeah,
and that's why this whole thing was done, and it was done at Biden's ordering of Merrick Garland to do something. And make no mistake, even though there are two state court prosecutions, one in New York, one in Georgia, those have Biden's fingerprints all over it. Garland's number three man was sent to New York. He theoretically quit his job at Justice Department to go to the state court. Who would do that? Goes to the state court to help Alvin Bragg figure out a tricky way to get this thing done. And so a fellow named Matthew Colangelo did just that. He resigned a very top position at Justice Department to go get Trump. So did Biden do this? Of course he did. I don't think Garland did it on his own. Garland was ordered to do it by Biden. And that's the same thing that happened with Fani Willis's case in Georgia, which now she's out of it. But that case came from the White House. In fact, Nathan Wade and I think Fani, too, visited the White House to talk about the case. So these are all federal directives coming from Biden to Merrick Garland. And meanwhile, these are the same people that say that, oh, Trump's a threat to democracy. If he gets in, he's going to actually prosecute all his opponents.
You know,
well, guess who's doing that? Guess who's doing that right now?
They have been. Now, are there legal grounds for Trump to do the same in this particular administration, this upcoming administration? What do you think about that?
Well, the problem is there are grounds. And now the question is whether we want to get into this payback or not. But it's legitimate payback if you use the criminal process to smear an electoral opponent. That's the kind of thing that Richard Nixon supposedly did back in Watergate. He never did, but I mean, he was sort of accused of using the White House's power to smear an opponent. This is terrible. These folks are depriving Trump of his constitutional rights, as any citizen would, to not be indicted on a bogus charge. And this was, name it, false imprisonment, all sorts of things that they could kind of get Biden's folks for. Now, are they going to do it? I don't think so. If I were Trump, I would still look at the Russia thing. I would look at what the FBI's done. There's still some dirty bird FBI agents, and maybe there's a real solid case there. But my point is, Biden did all this stuff. Literally, there was a conspiracy to deprive Trump of his rights as a citizen. But should Trump do anything about it, I would advise him, no, let it lie. Let's talk about it in the free speech arena and let the citizens know how terrible these folks were.
And maybe so. And yet there's still this suspicion that if you don't slit their throats legally, for what was done, that it'll happen again someday. Isn't that kind of the concern if
you
do nothing?
Well, that's the problem. That's the problem with not doing this is that it almost gives license to it. And that is the problem. You know, and the reason you have these prosecutions is to try to give fair warning to the rest of society that this would not be tolerated. And I mean, it's a legitimate prosecution. The problem is, just optically, it looks like you're as bad as the other guys. It looks like, and they would say, oh, you're just doing a tit for tat. You're just prosecuting your enemies. They're going to accuse Trump of that some more. So I don't know if that's going to do anything more than sort of split up society one more time.
Yeah. The cost politically would not be worth paying, I guess, at the moment is what we're talking about.
That's what I'm saying. There's so much for a president to do now, and it's just not going to look good if he goes back against the Biden forces. The fact is the best thing we can all do is put these people in the hall of shame and really call them out for what they are. And they should be shamed.
Yeah, we need to cancel their Amazon membership or something. I don't know. I'm just kidding here, John. John O'Connor, once again, author of Postgate, How the Washington Post Betrayed Deep Throat, Covered Up Watergate, and Began Today's Partisan Advocacy Journalism. It's a great read. I wanted to ask you here before I get onto a different topic. Right in the very beginning, you talked about how the judge's instructions made it so that the jury almost, you know, had to come out with a guilty verdict, then. Isn't that an issue that should be taken care of? Because I've been in favor of the fully informed jury groups for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. This whole idea that somehow the judge is the boss of the jury has concerned me. And there's been a growth of that for a long, long time. And if I say it, if he did this, then you must find this person guilty. And I'm kind of looking at this from the William Penn days, like, wait a minute, my vote on the jury is my vote. You know, it's not to be ordered by the judge. Is that something which is in need of reform here? This whole idea that, you know, the judge owns the jury in the prosecutorial bent of things. What do you think?
Well, the whole idea, the reason you have this system here is to prevent the inflammation of passions is the way the founders would talk about it. Mm-hmm. And you don't want people doing sort of lynching justice, so forth and so on. And everybody's always been afraid of the quote people unquote, that they're just irrational, the way it was looked at from our founding fathers' perspective. But now we have something else, and supposedly we're supposed to have these sober judges that won't let this happen.
The entire prosecutorial state, John, as you know, has unlimited resources to go after most people these days. Would you agree?
Right.
Okay.
And what I'm saying is that now with the advent of sort of you know, activism, the whole idea that it's great to be an activist judge. Oh, I'm an activist judge. I'm a liberal activist judge. Well, that's exactly what you're not supposed to be. A judge is supposed to be a sober, nonpartisan person, not someone out there to be an activist. And so what we have is the same disease that infects the media, that their job is supposed to tell everybody what they should think and who they should vote for. That's not their job, but they think that now. And now we have judges who think that their role is to promote the right political views and the right political party. And I don't know that, I mean, I do agree with your point, which is that maybe today I would trust 12 jurors rather than one judge who's got a political bias. And that's but the real problem is that our system is out of control because of this whole left-wing bent that starts in colleges where every professor idolizes activist judges.
Yeah, so the judiciary is controlled by the left. The academia, the academy is controlled by the left. It's all sort of, in one fell swoop, controlled in one direction. This is a multi-generational problem that we've been facing.
Oh, absolutely. It's a cultural problem. You can't have a democracy unless you have a fair and full argumentation. That's what John Stuart Mill talked about in 1835. You can't have liberty unless you have fair argument. Now what happens is there are a bunch of people out there that are trying to squelch fair argument. And that, like you said, the universities, then you get the judges and you get the politicians. And now you've, and you try to squelch. And now what you do in the guise of combating disinformation, you're combating ideas of the other side. I mean, MSNBC right now is melting down that Mark Zuckerberg actually thinks he ought to have more debate on his on Facebook and that he shouldn't be censoring.
And that's considered a problem. That's considered a problem that there's going to be open speech, right? And that
that's
is
right.
Just
they don't like open speech because, after all, remember, as to, in using Obama's words, oh, it's a sewer out there. You're going to allow this sewer to and that the sewer, of course, is anybody that's conservative.
Yeah, I suppose so. John O'Connor, author of Postgate, How the Washington Post Betrayed Deep Throat, Covered Up Watergate, and Started Today's Partisan Advocacy Journalism. You have another book in you. And what will we like most or be surprised most about Postgate?
Well, you should be surprised at what the Washington Post did to me when it looked like I wanted to report on some of their on some of the things about Watergate without accusing the Post. I wanted to publish about some of the things that I had discovered about Watergate that really were not talked about at the time. I had no idea that the Post had fraudulently covered it up. But once I began talking about these things, then I detailed the book what the Post did to me, and the Post started defrauding me as because they thought I was onto something. I didn't realize at the time that I was playing with fire, that I was playing with Post fraud. And then when I realized that they went to the lengths to defraud me, and I talk about in the book, it's a very interesting part of the book, it's then and only then that I say, you know something, there's something fishy going on. I'm going to start reviewing in depth all the Post reporting and all the information it had available to it to determine whether or not the Post covered this thing up from the outset. And what I found was, from the very first day of the arrests at Watergate, the Post was covering up information willfully and intentionally. And it was stunning to me because I was always sort of a Post fan. I thought, oh, gee, the Post did a great job in Watergate, like a lot of people did. Oh, and I always thought that was the exception to today's rule. Well, they were at least they did a good job in Watergate, and people tried to act like Watergate later on, and so they got too far afield. No, this whole thing started with Watergate. Watergate was, in fact, a fraud, and yet they still get away with it. And I am the only person that has studied in depth the Post reporting and shown what information that they definitely had in their laps and either didn't print it or printed the exact opposite of what was true. And I go through that, and it's really, to me, it's my sort of journey of discovery of a guy that's a true believer in the Post and was actually very active in following the Post during Watergate. And I was really big on figuring out who Deep Throat was, and I was fully engaged, and I was a federal prosecutor at the time, and was deeply involved in this kind of stuff. And yet I was fooled by the Post. I didn't know any better. You know, and so that's what's fascinating about it, I think, is from my perspective as a fellow that I would call myself a very well-informed citizen during the time of Watergate, and I was fooled. And the Post went out of its way to make sure that I was squelched when it looked like I was going to start to say something and people were listening to me. Then they got worried, and they did a couple things to me that I talk about in the book that are very juicy, frankly. And you can't really believe that they would do this, but they did it. So I just find it fascinating. But like I say, this is the I'm the only person out there stupid enough to waste part of his life researching all this, and I did it. And it's I think it's quite a book actually, and I think it'll be. And they know it, and they do everything they can to keep people from reading it. So
well, that's a good reason to read it. Then my final question there, knowing what you know now. And knowing what is kind of out in the open now, that most, if not many, of our so-called journalists at the top level are, in essence, intelligence agency assets, okay?
Right.
This is pretty well known now. And It's been talked about how the Washington Post essentially is the CIA's paper, okay?
Right.
Is it fair to say that Watergate was a CIA hit, an intelligence agency hit on the executive, on the presidency?
Well, in part it was. Part of it was the CIA hit. And what happened was the Post did cover up CIA involvement. And Ben Bradley was probably a CIA asset in the past as a foreign reporter. But they covered up Watergate, not primarily. Their motive in covering it up was really covering up the DNC. The Post and the DNC were joined at the hip. They even had the same general counsel. And the Post was proudly a Democratic paper. And if they would have printed the truth about the CIA, the Democrats would have also been smeared, because the Watergate wiretapping was really about out-of-town Democrats calling up young girls down the street. The CIA had, you know, a program of extortion and wiretapping of prostitutes and johns, and they loved gathering this information because it helped them extort people and so forth and so on. So the CIA had infiltrated the White House. There's no doubt about it. The Post mm-hmm. knew that. But if they would have uncovered that, they would have also uncovered what the Democrats were doing, and they also would have let Richard Nixon off the hook. So they had a political motive for protecting the CIA. They really weren't protecting the CIA because they cared about the CIA. They protected the CIA because they were protecting the Democrats and trying to stab Nixon, and they did both successfully.
And we have to, of course, keep the history books filled with glowing reports about Woodward and Bernstein, right? We can't...
Right, exactly, no, exactly.
Oh, boy, I'll tell you. It's like my entire adult lifetime, John, I don't know about yours, is have been almost having to relearn my government history, because what's in the history books is, it's just written by the people who ended up chiseling their way to the top, it seems. That's a little cynical,
well,
I know.
It certainly is true in terms of modern history, and I think it actually has gotten worse as a result of Watergate. I mean, Watergate really was a tide turner because of this unique circumstances. Think about it. The only time in the country's history where a president has been expelled from office prematurely, it was a journalistically impelled scandal. And so now when people go to journalism school, they're taught Watergate, that this shows how wonderful we are and how we're really the guardians of democracy.
Yes, by being a good little activist commies, right? You know, that's
right.
That's the lesson learned. Right?
They look at themselves as being watchdogs, but you know, a watchdog doesn't bite his keeper; it bites the other guy, and that's what they have become. And they think that's wonderful. They are imbued with this idea that they're being wonderful, and that's what's scary about it. They don't think, gee, we're nasty people who are intentionally lying. Oh, no. They think of themselves as being these wonderful guardians of democracy. And like I say, it just makes you sick to tune in MSNBC, which I do. I can't stand it, but I do it
anyway.
So
you're the guy that's watching that show. Okay. All right. You know, their ratings are pretty
exactly.
low. All right.
Oh, it's terrible. And you can see it. I mean, it's just really sad. I mean, see it. Even CNN looks wonderful compared to MSNBC.
You know, I have to tell you, in many ways, you know, I've kind of tired of Fox News, and I know Fox News is the number one. But I've kind of tired of the bleach blonde and the sleeve dresses and the leg shows and, you know, all that kind of stuff. I've kind of tired of that style of news. The one thing I've noticed about CNN recently is that they've been kind of shutting up and letting people talk more, which I thought was kind of at least I've detected a change over there. Maybe they're actually going to deliver news again someday. You never know.
They're going that way. No, they're slowly but surely going that way. I'm very encouraged by them, and I watch CNN more than I used to. I find that they have the one fellow there that's a conservative commentator that they let talk. They're letting him talk a little more. I forget what his name is, but they're a little bit better, and they understand that they've got to get eyeballs, and the people out there are not completely stupid. They like two sides to a story. So my wife and I both tune in a fair amount to CNN these days. I'm still a Fox guy, but
I still watch Fox more than anything else. But I'm just tired of the formula. You know, it's just kind
That's
of
right.
It's just insulting. Like, I wouldn't watch the news unless some woman has her jumblies out in front of me, you know?
Well, that's right. That's right. And, you know, as much as I like Sean Hannity, I mean, sometimes Sean can be rat-a-tat-tat a little bit too much and so forth. And I want, and I'll tell you what I want. I want full and fair discussion. That's what I am. And I'm a lawyer. I want to know what the other side is saying, and I want to know what the arguments are against what they're saying in a full and fair way. And that's what I'm used to in our court system. I want to know what the other guy's saying, and either I can defeat it, or if he's right, guess what? I'm going to change.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I want full and fair discussion. And any channel that does that best is my channel.
All right. Very good. Hey, John, good talking as always. And thanks for taking the time this morning. Okay.
Great talking to you, Bill. Take care.
John O'Connor. His book is Postgate, How the Washington Post Betrayed Deep Throat, Covered Up Watergate, began today's partisan advocacy journalism. Naturally, I'll put all this information on KMED.com.
This is Brent with Home and Built Deck and Fence. Many customers in the Rogue Valley ask why winter is a great time for deck, fence, and siding projects. The answer? Faster schedule.
News Talk 106.3 KMED. You're waking up with the Bill Myers Show.
20 before 8. Former President Jimmy Carter being laid to rest right now. Funeral is ongoing, I should say. And I wish I had better things to say about former President Carter. I just remember what it was like growing up in the late 70s and the economy, especially that I was facing at that time. And I guess I'm not as generous as others might be. You know about that. I just remember the tough time of trying to get a job. Now, when I first went for my full-time jobs, my first full-time job was 1980. And so that was, I was waiting for the election of 1980 at that point. And I don't even think I voted in 1980 because it was moving around so much. And I wasn't a valid voter by the time I ended up settling in Barstow in late 1980. But I got to tell you, getting out of school in 1979, big baby boomer, late baby boomer class, and I got to tell you, getting a job was tough. Was tough in those things. I did a lot of things that whatever it took. Finally broke into radio, and then, it still took time even under Reagan before things started getting a little bit better. But well, I'll tell you that he talked about that. You know, there's the famous malaise speech. Yeah. Malaise is always what runs through my mind about Jimmy Carter, and he's not a particularly nice guy. That's the other thing I know. And all you're going to do is hear good things about today. What a wonderful man or humanitarian it is. And I'm sorry, I'm not there. I just think my memory of the late 70s is still pretty sharp. I think it's 7:42 at KMED. 770-5633. Open phone time. Yep, Conspiracy Theory Thursday, you betcha. And we'll do it right after news.
Quality Fence is doing it right for you.
Postmaster steel posts are engineered to have the strength of steel.
Kia Medford. Click KiaMedford.com.
Hi, I'm Lisa with Pacific Survey Supply, and I'm on KMED.
7:47, and when I play a polka, when if possible, it means Brad's here. Hello, my fellow Slovenian brother. How you doing?
It's always great to hear the motherland music.
Yep. What's on your mind, huh?
Hey, it's very interesting that you were bringing up the Carter episode.
What was your overall take? I just remembered it as a lousy time. And I know that I think that the Carter administration was a victory of marketing over reality. But that's just me.
Well, the way I measure it, I'll never forget it. We had all of our hostages still being under siege in Iran, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just finishing my college education. It was my last quarter. It was, fall of 80. Anyway, what was interesting at our college, I went to a small college in Washington State, but we had a lot of Middle Eastern kids that were there, and the interesting thing you would see in the men's bathroom was all the dialogue: "Hate America, death to America." I mean, it was pretty belligerent.
And there's a part of me that says, "Okay, what the hell are you doing here, then?"
Yeah, Well, and what I remember, as soon as Reagan got in, our hostages got released. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, it was almost infinitesimally short amount of time. It just spoke loudly to who the Iranians were afraid of.
Point well taken. I appreciate the call. Thank you, Brother Brad.
In the late...
Oh, wrong one. Not late, great. Golden State. There we go. Have to have the right theme. Lucretia, I'm always glad you're here. You want to make a good point then? Fires or something else? Go ahead.
Okay, but yeah, can I make one about President Eric Carter?
Okay, sure, if you want to.
Okay, do you remember who his Secretary of Defense was, who was also head of the Trilateral Commission?
No, I don't off the top of my head, no.
The big new Brzezinski, he wrote the book Between Two Ages on the Tectonic Age.
Mm-hmm.
That we're going to see a gradual appearance of a more controlled society.
Yeah, he's a technocrat, essentially a technocrat, right?
Dominated by an elite, unrestrained by traditional values.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's why all this idea about Jimmy Carter being, oh, look at the simple peanut farmer thing. He was filled with globalists, too. Yeah.
Okay, so one quick question, too, or one quick point.
No, thanks. The idea is not to question me all the time, but go ahead.
I know, but I sent this to you. Did you get how Elon Musk is going to control our borders? I went through all the things yesterday about Elon Musk being a con man. Do you know how we're going to control the borders?
Well, it's most likely going to be controlled through artificial intelligence. I would imagine is probably where they want to take it.
Exactly.
Because I didn't read the, I was just trying to get better. I had a cold here, Lucretia, as you can tell.
Okay.
So I wasn't reading everything. So I think, they'll probably, this will be the AI real ID revolution.
A lot of people are getting sick with this weird fog. But anyway, let's go to the fires. I've got not only Gematria, which he knew it was going to be devastating because of how they called it apocalyptic fire, but it started at 1190. Okay, in the Pacific Palisades, the town was 1190 North Palisade, which if you look up you've got, I missed that out. I didn't put that in there. Both Jesuit and something else is also 1190. There's 119. It adds up to 119. So we know the Jesuits were behind it.
So the Jesuits were behind the California fires. That's an interesting theory.
Absolutely. Based on exactly where they said it started, which actually there was about five fires that all started at once, but it wasn't just one. That's where they said it started. Like here, they had fires all over the place. So there was a fire that started there. All the firemen went to the Pacific Palisades, and that's how it got taken off, just like it did here.
Okay. All right. That's an interesting theory. Yeah. We need some big evidence, though. My curiosity, though, when you're going into the 1190, the numerology of 119, does that mean that, 1190 AM radio stations like KEX in Portland, are they all run by the Jesuits, too, or is that different, ultimately?
No. Well, there's a lot about your zip code, too, that tells you much where they're going to be hitting. But yeah, the Jesuits and the Vatican, or let's see, Vatican is 119 and Francis is 119.
All right, let's see. Let's look at Medford's main one. Let's see, East Medford, 975-04, so that'd be 16, 21-25, so it's a 7. So it's a 7. So now, is that a devil address?
I'm not really fast in all this as far as telling you that.
Okay, all right.
There's one more big thing, Bill.
Okay.
If people go to earth.nullschool, earth.nullschool.net, and you look at the jet stream, it comes out of Russia.
Okay, all I'm going to say, I know you bleat that every time, just about every time. So I'll tell you what, if bad stuff always comes from the weather machine, where does the good weather come from? That's all I'm asking. Thanks for the call, Lucretia. Let me go to Deplorable Patrick. Hello, Deplorable Patrick. You want to talk about that water tower used to be in White City?
Good morning. Yes, I was there, and what happened was the tank was not vented properly, and when it drained, it created a vacuum in there that collapsed the tank. I don't remember if it was an unusual draw from the water or just the regular, but it was because it wasn't vented. And then they stupidly tore it down. And yes, you can create hydraulic fuses hydraulic fuses were there in aircraft in the war, warplanes, because if the hydraulic system got shot out, and it's, you suddenly start to lose a lot of hydraulic.
Yeah, you start to lose too much pressure that it shuts down the water. Well, you know, the interesting thing is that, Alan DeBoer, Senator Alan DeBoer, former Senator Alan DeBoer, sent me a link to something that he has on his house, which is, it's called Flow. Not Flow like Progressive, but Flow by Moen, you know, that Moen company. And it's a really interesting, it's a leak detection system. And it's like $500, and I guess you can get a discount on your house insurance because, let me tell you, water damage. You know, you're gone for a weekend, and your water heater blows out and floods your whole house. It's tens of thousands, if not more, of damage, right? You can destroy a home, really. And I guess it looks at these kind of problems. It can even help you detect leaks as much as like a drop per minute is what it says. It's like $500. I thought it was pretty interesting. So there is something out there to do it, you know?
Learn more. I'd like to learn more about that. And Jimmy Carter signed the Handgun Control Act, and Jimmy Carter gave away the Panama Canal. I don't miss him.
All right. Fair enough. Let me go to Dave. Hello, Dave. You can wrap up on a Carter note here. Let's hear it. Or no, you wanted to talk fires, didn't you? Okay.
I wanted to talk fires because, see, I don't whether those houses were insured or not, those are all some of the most wealthiest people. Their houses are burning down. What do you think if they do have insurance, they just collect it and leave the state?
Well, I could see then a lot of liberal types moving to Texas because you need to take Texas down. See, this concerns me a little bit when you see, you know, the whole idea of liberalism is that you're there, you destroy your particular area, and then you move to another place, but you take your politics there. What do you think?
No, I think that's true because I brought my politics to Siskiyou County because it's, the Siskiyou County has body politic is the first thing. The county can tell the state to go pound sand.
And that's what we need here, too. Thank you for the call, Dave. 756 at KMED, 99.3 KBXG. He has some emails of the day I want to share with you, too. Those are all coming up. Good stuff.
Stephen Westfall, Inc. is thrilled to announce the winner of their second metal roof
wash buggy wrap lab.
You're hearing The Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
Shade before 8 at KMED and KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG, Grants Pass. Captain Bill's going to talk with me here in a few minutes. He's been getting some love from the Epic Times. And we're also going to talk to Diana Anderson a little bit later in the show because Friday, tomorrow, she's going to have another one of those events as she exposes the globalism horde trying to root out communism in her own system. And she and Bob Hayworth, by the way, both testified at yesterday's Medford City Council. They commented on the speed limit deal. It would seem to me that more people need to either be commenting or sending meaningful comments to the city of Medford. I haven't sent my comment to council yet. But I'm going to, and I'm hoping that you do also, because whatever you don't complain about will not get looked at. I assure you, the spandex mafia is really, really huge on, you know, on getting there. You know, as far as they're concerned, they'd like if the car is gone, so it'd all be downtown. Downtown bums and bird scooters, you know, that sort of thing. It's wrong what the council, what past councils and what the city has signed on to, this business district speed limit sort of thing, okay? It's my opinion, but you got to let them know. At least two testified yesterday. That's good. That's a start, though. Be great to see about 20. Just let them know. All right, some emails of the day. Emails of the day, and that's sponsored by Dr. Steve Nelson, Central Point Family Dentistry, centralpointfamilydentistry.com, next to the Mazatlan Mexican Restaurant. And by the way, they have a kiosk there if you need specialized toothpaste, water picks. I bought one there the other day. They sell that stuff at cost. Because he wants to make sure you stay healthy. CentralPointFamilyDentistry.com. I'm going to give an email of the day to Hans Albuquerque, whoever he or she is. Bill, it has been 2 weeks. It's been 2 weeks plus since we heard a peep about drones and UFOs. Wow. They must be mesmerized by the East Coast snow, the congressional rollover, Johnson's speakership, and, of course, the Cal Fires. Those dang aliens, they're so respectful of our top news stories. I love those aliens. They make it so easy to follow the Truman Show. You make me laugh. I like that, Hans. Randy says, Bill, Something about the fires in L.A. is missing. I've heard nothing regarding how the forest fire started and why it has spread in disconnected segments moving against the wind. What's even more curious is that it was recently predicted to happen, almost like it was on cue. Could the recent decrease in L.A. fire's budget be connected? The lack of maintenance of firefighting resources resulting in dry hydrants seems suspicious. Several investigators into the Lanai fire concluded that, or Lahaina, I think is what you meant, Lahaina fire concluded that it was intentionally set, and like the L.A. fire's resource to combat fires were non-functional. This represents a pattern. You know, the Lahaina fires, though, the power company is admitting that they fell on their sword over that one, about having started it. Okay, just to be clear. Now, unless they're lying, unless the globalists said you're going to take the blame, yeah, it could be. It could be. Darren writes, hey, Bill, any idea what those buses are doing at the airport? They've been idling on the road across from the airport for several days, and when I'm walking on my lunchtime, I've seen them coming out from the airport. I don't know. I don't know. What buses are they? I guess I can't answer that. Have you asked them? Are the illegal aliens being piped in here from the Biden administration? It could be. If so, I don't know. What do they look like? Any special? Any names? Okay, buses. Reverend David says, Bill, I think the terrorists who Biden has invited into our country are beginning their mission. Fires are popping up everywhere in Los Angeles. Hollywood Hills fire popped up out of nowhere last evening. Studio City caught fire last night, and in Fort Worth, Texas, a power substation just happened to explode last night, and a fire erupted there. Isn't it interesting that just before President-elect Trump is to be sworn in, this is happening? Not to mention the drones on the East Coast. No, those are gone now, David. And communication cables to Taiwan being cut this week. Just saying, it seems coincidental. And finally, we have Jeff, who's right this morning. Bill, pressure is resistance to flow, the water hydraulics. And you nailed it with all the homes burnt, whereby every water main is open and running out on the ground, eliminating the resistance, thereby reducing or eliminating water pressure. If you want to go with gallons per minute, just use a general number like 1,000 GPM. 10 burnt homes in a neighborhood whose water mains are wide open, flowing 100 gallons per minute, there will be no water at the hydrant on the corner. Now, given all that, I can only speculate that there are several shutoff valves throughout the system. Whether or not anyone even thought of shutting off burnt neighborhoods, nobody knows. Jeff, interesting. Well, that's what I was talking about, Senator DeBoer sending me that information about that flow meter from Moen. Of course, it is a little pricey, you know, $500, but boy, it'll detect leaks. And I think it would keep your house from being destroyed if it burnt down. I guess it's too late. Who cares? How the hell with my neighborhood? Let it burn, right? I'm just kidding. Email Bill at BillMeyerShow.com. News.